Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
Once you get a taste of self-employment, you'll never go back. And so I've never looked back. That was 18 years ago, and here I am today.
Today's guest is Derek Fredrickson. And if you've ever felt like your business is moving fast, but the foundation underneath it isn't keeping up, this conversation is going to resonate deeply. Derek brings a perspective that is equal parts strategic and human. He understands what it takes to build the kind of operational backbone that sets a founder free, not just to grow, but to lead with clarity and intention. In this episode, Derek opens up about the journey from corporate life to entrepreneurship, what it really means to trust the people around you, and why scaling a business often has less to do with what you do and more to do with who you become in the process. Now let's welcome Derek Fredrickson. Derek is an American entrepreneur based in Paris and the founder of the COO Solution, a firm that embeds fractional COOs into founder-led businesses as the trusted second-in-command, the bridge between vision and execution. For the better part of two decades, he has helped business owners scale to 7- and 8-figure levels while reclaiming their freedom. His team serves clients across the U.S., U.K., and Europe. Outside of work, he skis the French Alps and pursues a lifelong mission to master French wine. Derek, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here, David.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. So you began your career on Wall Street. And how long did you work in financial services?
So I started right out of university. I thought that was my path. That was my professional journey. So I worked on Wall Street for about 12, 14 years. And, that was an enjoyable part of my career. I did not expect to take the leap and join into the world of entrepreneurship. But as you know, my wife, Fabienne, was running a very successful business coaching company at the time, and she needed some help. And we had some kind of personal dreams and aspirations to move to France. We used to live in Connecticut, as you know. And I didn't think that I would be able to see the path for me to be able to take a year and spend it in France, you know, while I was still working on Wall Street. So in 2008, when the whole financial crisis was bubbling around the world, I left my kind of corporate Wall Street career and then started to work with my wife and really just kind of jumped into the world of business coaching, entrepreneurship. Didn't know anything about the industry, didn't know anything about entrepreneurship. But as my wife said, once you get a taste of self-employment, you'll never go back. And so I've never looked back. That was 18 years ago. And here I am today. So,
yeah. How did it feel right before you made the decision to leave Wall Street, to leave that kind of job?
Terrifying, if I'm being totally honest. We had just had our second child. You know, we had just purchased a new house on the beach area of Connecticut. And, I was very much of the mindset at the time that I wanted security. I wanted certainty. You know, my wife's business was very successful. She had just crossed the 7 figures mark, but I needed to have that sense of this is really, really going to work. We had never worked before. It was a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a jump, but it was a trusted leap, if you will. But what I realized is that within the first few months, two things happened that kind of solidified the decision. Number one, I realized very quickly that I could add more value, not just financial value and results, but kind of meaningful, significant value that I could bring, much more so in her business than I could on my professional path with Wall Street. So I kind of financially validated the decision in that way. And number two, 6 months after I left, my entire department of the investment bank I was working at was let go anyway. So I probably would have been out of a job and looking for something anyway. So it was I want to say it was a difficult decision. It was a very well thought out and kind of calculated decision. But yeah, just before we kind of made the commitment and I made the decision, it was, you know, there's a lot of fear. What if this doesn't work? What if I'm not any value? What if this does work and it gets really successful? What would that look like? What would I be? But yeah, there was a lot of fear and uncertainty going on in the very, very beginning.
Yeah, what would I be is actually a common question. Mm. It's a question I hear a lot from people, whether they leave their job voluntarily or involuntarily. It's like the first day that you're not in that seat of being an employee, like, what do I call myself?
Yeah.
Right? Because your identity is so tied to your job title and your employer. People like, they don't know what to put on their LinkedIn profile. They don't know what to say when they're introducing themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, you have to put yourself out there as representing something new where you haven't sold anything yet.
Yeah.
So there's no internal validation that you actually are doing that. All you're doing is saying it to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very true. I mean, because I didn't know anything about her business, I used the analogy that I kind of started in the mailroom and worked my way up. You know, I started to look, you know, what is internet marketing and what's an email list and how do you sell, you know, coaching services online, products, you know, programs, masterminds, et cetera. But what I realized is that I could bring a lot of my skill set, a lot of my experience, a lot of expertise, even though it wasn't obviously in the same industry, I could bring that forward in terms of how we manage projects or how I work with team or how I can really help understand, you know, if this is the vision, if this is the strategy, what we want to accomplish, how do we make that happen? How do I orchestrate the day-to-day? How do I get the team aligned? You know, I think the relationship that my wife and I had in the beginning and for the 15 years that we worked together, I often describe it, she was front stage and I was backstage, right? So she was directly the one that could bring in the more clients, the more revenue, but I was creating the structures, the systems, the processes, the right people in the right seat to allow that to happen. So I was able to validate indirectly the value that I was bringing because it was allowing her to directly bring in the value in terms of the financial, you know, results. But for a period of a couple of years, I also struggled with that identity. Like maybe I want to be more front stage. Maybe I should be speaking and coaching and teaching. But I went down that path for a little bit and I realized that my skill set, my zone of genius is running other people's companies. That's what I enjoy most. And it's a bit ironic now because I have launched my own company. So I've kind of gone through a full circle journey. And, you know, a couple of years ago, I took off the kind of operator hat and put on my own kind of CEO visionary hat and launched, you know, the business that I'm running today. So,
yeah. So how does that feel now that you're the front person?
Yeah, it was an identity shift again. And it was, again, a very conscious decision. It wasn't like I just decided, oh, I'm going to just launch my company on a whim. You know, my wife and I had worked together for about 15 years. We scaled that company to multiple seven figures. I was the day-to-day COO operator, if you will. She was the CEO. I was the COO, chief operating officer. And then once it got to a point where it was like a self-managed company, I started to offer fractional, meaning part-time, COO services to other companies that were scaling at seven figures. You know, mostly in our business coaching community, people would tap me on the shoulder and they would say, I need a Derek. I need somebody to do for my business what you've done for your wife's business. So I did that for a number of years and started to, I would say, own my craft. Like, how do I do this? What's my methodology? What's my approach? And then I wanted to scale that. But obviously, as a fractional executive, you can only scale so much of your own time. So I very deliberately took off the COO hat, put on the CEO hat, launched my company and kind of, I mean, I'm simplifying, but kind of took the playbook of what I've done with others and plugged it into my business. And I've just been kind of growing and scaling that ever since. So I still catch myself because I'm a operator at heart. So I like to get into the nitty gritty of the day to day, but I also have my own COO that helps me run my company. And she's always coaching me and saying, Derek, you know, stay in your CEO lane. That's what I'm here for. So, but it's been a journey and, but I've enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah. So Derek, how do you figure out what to say no to and what to say yes to?
That's a great question. I'll say this. I've been very open-minded in viewing opportunities that present themselves. And I'm not somebody who just kind of jumps in without knowing the facts. I've heard this expression recently, and I kind of take it to heart that there are two types of people. There are those that think, then talk, and then those that are talk, then think. I'm a think, then talk. And so I process, I internalize, I kind of weigh the pros and cons before I make a decision. But I also look at opportunities in a way of, I maybe didn't ask for this opportunity, but the fact that this opportunity presented itself, if it feels like it's the right decision, not just logic and reason, but if it also feels like the right decision, I'll take the next step. And I think there's been a lot of me saying yes to opportunities where I didn't really know what the end result would be in order to explore, where is this going to lead me on my path? Is it going to open new doors, new opportunities, new connections, new partnerships? And so that's been a very worthwhile experience because I tend to be more reserved and more kind of calculated and risk tolerant. Not to say I'm making, you know, risky decisions all the time, but I'm being more proactive and just kind of saying yes to an opportunity. But also, as you said, you know, success is based on the decisions that you say yes and no to. And there are some that I've said no to just because it doesn't feel like the right step in the evolution of what my journey is. And so you kind of learn your lessons with both, I think.
Yeah. And what happens when you hit unexpected plateaus?
So, yeah, that's a great question. I would say what I do, and there's been a few, I think in the beginning, I had a lot of momentum when I launched my company. And then we hit this kind of plateau and asked myself, should I have done this, right? Is this what it's going to be? I had very aspirational goals of what I wanted to have in my business, not just in the first year, but I very clearly and strategically mapped out what I call my 10-3-1, my 10-year plan, my 3-year target, and my 1-year picture. And that 1-year picture felt like it was going to be longer than 1 year to get to. And so when I reached those plateaus, I think oftentimes, and this is the work that we do with our clients, before we just go and jump in and make another decision, right? Talk and then think about it. I wanted to think about it. So I said, you know, maybe why am I choosing to have this experience? Why am I realizing this sense of plateau or kind of status quo, if you will? And I look at in a couple different ways, you know, what's working, what's good about this, right? Kind of focus on the kind of gratitude aspect of where I've come from and what I've appreciated to get me to this point. But then also very realistically looking at what's not working, right? What needs to change? What needs to be improved or removed either in the business model, the clients we're working with, and my own identity and my own mindset, how I structure my team, how I'm running my business, you know, all of these things come about, you know. And I think one example was when we reached this plateau, I had been offering, you know, 2 different services to 2 very different avatars in the work that we were doing. And I clearly realized that if I looked back and said, you know, where are my biggest successes coming from, it was from one particular avatar. And I was serving this other avatar almost out of obligation or out of a feeling that I needed to, as opposed to I really wanted to. And so when I kind of said no to that and kind of drew the line in the sand and started to focus more on the avatar and the client profile of the companies that we would work with that would really allow me to scale and hit my goals, that's when I started to get even more traction. So I think it's sometimes for me, I take a step back, I assess, I think through pros and cons. What if we did? What if we didn't? And then I make that decision to go very confidently in the direction that I feel is going to be the best one, you know, to move into going forward.
Yeah, what were those 2 avatars?
So at the time, I was offering our services to companies that were scaling at 7 to 8 figures. And that was our COO, our chief operating officer model. And we were also offering services for those companies not quite at 7 figures. They might be at multiple 6 figures, so under 1 million. And that's what we were calling our OBM, online business manager. It was more kind of tactical admin focused on things like marketing and operations and project management. Lovely clients. But what I realized is that there were challenges in that avatar. Nothing wrong with the business that's at that stage. We're all, you know, going through our own professional journey. But what I realized is that we could achieve more momentum, more results, and get more traction with those companies that were very well established at multiple 7 figures. They had the means to invest. They had a longer runway of what they wanted to accomplish. The owner was more confident in making decisions that would allow them to reach those goals. Where if you're at, you know, multiple 6 figures, it's really more about just like keep doing what you're already doing and do it well so that you can get that revenue up to a point at 7 figures. And also, to be honest, I think that the clients were sometimes doubting themselves, like, is this something that I really need? Maybe I should get a VA. Maybe I'll go in a different direction. And so there was these like start and stop pivot moments. And so we kind of phased out that approach and focused mostly, almost exclusively now on 7-8 figure companies. And that's when the plateau has really started to scale up, if you will.
Yeah. And what industries are these clients in?
So I like to say we're fairly industry agnostic in our experience for founder-led companies and businesses that are scaling at 7, you know, to low 8 figures, regardless of industry, similar challenges, similar opportunities. The owner's typically the bottleneck. The team's not aligned in terms of their roles and responsibilities. They're not, you know, really kind of scaling at a level that's going to allow them to get to their growth. And so industries, we do have a good number of them in service-based industries. So coaching, training, consulting, you know, healthcare, real estate, law, interior design. But we also do engineering and manufacturing and construction, product-based businesses, even brick and mortar as an example. And I think, again, that the common denominator is the first and foremost, not so much about the industry because we're fairly industry agnostic, but the founder has to be willing to see a bigger future for themselves and be motivated enough to change. Not this the business to change, but they need to change. They need to realize that they need to be doing things differently. They need to be wearing a different CEO hat than maybe they've been wearing for some time. So some of that is getting out of their own way and trusting the process and relying on team. It's usually less about them doing more and more about them thinking more about the bigger future and then allowing somebody who's wired to run a business like a COO to kind of execute on that vision in order for them to scale. That's typically the avatar, if you will, in the type of companies that we work with.
Yeah. And what differentiates you from other companies that provide scaling services?
Sure. Great question. I would say some of the differentiators that I speak to is that we are not a matchmaking company. This is not a placement service. This is not something where I'm like, great, David, here's your COO. And hey, COO, here's David, great company. And they would go and do what they would do as if you were their own client. That in my book is what I call matchmaking. It's not a personal value of mine. And primarily because what I say we provide is a trusted second in command. So I think the value of trust goes a long way, because when you bring in a COO, a second in command, it's not a transactional hire. You're bringing in a strategic leadership shift in how you're running the company. And so there's got to be this cascade of trust from the client to myself, and then myself to the boots on the ground operator that will be working with that company. But it's a partnership. It's a collaborative exercise, as opposed to just, here's your COO and just, they're going to go do what they know how to do because they love it. And that's their zone of genius. And they love running other people's company. We have a process. We have a methodology based on how I've done it, as well as the collective of 15 COOs that I have on my team that are all bringing our best practices into our structured way of how we do what we do. And I think that makes it quite unique. I think the other thing is that we are, you know, the bridge from the vision to the execution. So you get that strategic thought partner with that CEO that can talk about the vision, that can talk about the ideation without any judgment, but also somebody that's like wired to roll up their sleeves and get to work. We love to finish what things have been, you know, what people have started. We like to land the planes of all of the entrepreneurial ideas that the business owner is floating around. And that builds trust, that builds faith and confidence for them to be able to make bigger and bolder decisions. So I think it's a pretty unique dynamic in that regard.
Yeah, it sounds like in addition to some strategic and tactical issues that you deal with clients, there are also a lot of mindset issues.
Totally.
Right? Issues of trust and confidence, and
yeah,
which you also have gone through as you have described your own professional journey and right and the launch of your current business and how you've decided what to do, what not to do.
Yeah.
In all of this, first of all, how do you tap into thought partners who can help you through that thinking process? Mm-hmm. Particularly since you like to think first, act second.
Yeah.
There's probably some process that involves that thinking. And I'm assuming, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming it probably involves some other people as well.
Yeah, of course. I'll go back to one of the initial question or thoughts that you just mentioned is that when we do work with clients, yeah, I mean, we're very much about the strategy, the tactics, right? I call it the hard side of being a COO, more like masculine, more, you know, kind of left brain. But then there's also the softer side. It's that EQ component. It's that ability to, I think, step into the entrepreneurial mindset when you're working with the founder as a COO, knowing that nothing's ever linear, right? There are high highs and low lows. All of the COOs that I have on my team are entrepreneurial in nature. They've run their own businesses and they've lived in that space. So they get that this is not just all about strategy and tactics and project management and deadlines. There's a softer side. There's an emotional, intelligent component that needs to be brought to the conversation. So I think that's a big element that needs to be, you know, taken into consideration. But I also know I'm not too cool for school, right? I don't know what I don't know about how to grow and scale this type of business on my own, meaning it's my company. I could do it for others. That's what I've been doing for 15 years. But when it's your own, it's something different. So I have a couple of different, call them peer networking groups, masterminds, coaches. I mean, I'll take all the help I can get because I'm always looking up the ladder and asking in a way, not just from a place of taking, but also, you know, giving in return. That's the nature of having a community. But, you know, what would you do in this situation? What have you experienced when you've been in this position as you're growing and scaling your company? And I kind of take it all in as a sponge. I think that's very, very important, is not to judge other people's experiences. You could maybe judge their opinions if they've not lived it, but I really appreciate those that provide the value of sharing from an experience perspective so that I can kind of discern what they did and understand how that might cascade into what I could do, as opposed to, you know, David, what you really should do, although I've never done this, what you really should do is this, as opposed to what I did in that situation when I experienced something similar was this. And I kind of take that at face value and bring in the lessons and the experiences that can be relevant to me. Yeah.
Yeah. So do you, when you're encountering others and you're looking to connect with somebody as a thinking partner, do you look for those who share an experienced perspective?
Yeah, for sure. I'm in two different groups right now where that is the model, almost to the point where one is they almost have it written in their kind of rules of operating that this kind of forum is not designed to provide what they call non-experience shares, meaning this is not a coaching thing, which is what you could do or what you should do, but I've never done it. It's really done through the lens of this is what I've experienced in a similar situation. And I think that comes more from a value of trust as opposed to just somebody kind of, you know, giving their opinions, you know, unbiased or objectively based on their own interpretations or anything else. And I see that in different ways. I mean, I'm in, you know, two different groups now here in Europe. I mean, I think when we lived in the US, there were a lot of those that were available. So here in France and in Europe, it's not as common, but I found a couple that work really, really well. I mean, I have my own coach that helps me to be a better man. I'm in a group that helps me be a better dad. I'm in two different groups that help me be a better business owner. So I think I'm trying to kind of supplement, you know, what I know and what I don't know, but also what I don't know about what I don't know, and being able to bring in, you know, call them the experts, but also those that have just experienced something that at a level, whether it's a level up or a level below or a level that's on the same plane as what I'm dealing with now, it kind of creates that commonality, which I think is really, really important to feel like you're not alone, right? You don't have to go through this and feel like you're the Lone Ranger.
Yeah. And is this something that you also encourage your clients to do, right? Because you're encouraging the CEO to make some changes in behavior.
Yeah.
Based on what you've described.
Of course.
Right. Do you try to connect them with the right kinds of kind of informal teams that will help them understand how they can be better at what they do?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. What's interesting is a majority of the clients that we work with, because they are what I call growth-minded entrepreneurs, right? We don't work with companies that are looking to maintain the status quo. They're here and they want to go there, right? They want a 2X, 10X. They want to exit. They want to sell, whatever that might be. One of the things we ask our clients in the very beginning is, what is your North Star? And the North Star is the why. Why do you want to grow and scale? Why do you want to exit? It might be they want to not just work as hard as they want to spend more time with their family. They want to feel like it doesn't feel like they're pushing the boulder of their business up the hill. They want it to feel more ease, more grace, et cetera. But they're also, most of them, in other communities where they're getting a lot of ideas on how to, you know, what to do to 10X or 2X. And so they come to us with a lot of ideas, which is great. But what we have to do is kind of create the infrastructure on how you're going to get to that 10X as an example. One of the things I say to the clients we work with is, yeah, we'll help you with what you need to do to grow and scale your business. That's why you bring us in. But how we're going to do that is focus just as much on how you're doing what you're doing. Because the how is the structure, the systems, the process, the team, et cetera, that's going to allow you to scale. And most business owners want it, but they don't want to be they don't want to need to be the one to actually build it, right? It's not their strong suit. They don't like dealing in the day-to-day. They like feeling on, they're focused more on where we're going in the future. And in some cases, when we're like working with them about how to step out of being the bottleneck or realize where they're kind of getting in their own way, there's mindset that comes out from that. And there's an identity shift that the CEO is experiencing where they're not the jack of all trades that they used to be. They need to be a kind of more leadership-focused CEO. So we might bring in, you know, we have partners that might be a really strong executive leadership coach or somebody that can help them work on their mindset and their identity to kind of clear, you know, some of the blocks that might be even unknowingly to the CEO blocking them, not just the tactical things, but the kind of mindset belief things that might be getting in the way. So we know what our lane is and how we help our clients, but we also know what is not our lane and when we need to bring in other experts that can help them in addition to what we're doing.
Yeah, no, that's really important. And I agree with you that connecting with the right people to provide you with the support that you need right now is really critical.
Yeah.
And I love what you have expressed about sharing from an experienced perspective. Mm-hmm. It's one of our principles in our community.
Yeah.
It's not about giving advice.
Yep.
It's about sharing something relevant that you may have done that speaks to the challenge that another member is dealing with.
Yeah. I think it solidifies trust, connection, credibility, where if you're just getting, like, as you say, advice or opinions, that's more transactional. It doesn't feel as an invested kind of commitment, where if you're sharing what you've experienced personally on your own journey that could be relevant to the individual that's seeking some guidance, mentorship, coaching support, whatever it is, I think it's a different dynamic than just, let me tell you what I think you should do, which I think is what some coaching is about. But I think the most meaningful coaching and kind of mentorship is more based on experience and kind of value-based sharing in that regard.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. Mm-hmm. Derek, this has been a great conversation about you, your professional and personal journey, how you've built the business that you have today. And you've really taken us behind the scenes at you know, some of the trials and tribulations of what actually goes along with that.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like you've done a great job in understanding who you are, what your strengths are, building a team that is very much in alignment with your own vision.
Yeah.
And glad we've connected. Glad we were able to share this story today.
Thank you.
And looking forward to hearing more about it.
Yeah.
If somebody wants to go deeper with anything we've discussed, Derek, where's the best place to go and where can they get in touch with you?
Yeah, the best place is our website. It's thecoosolution.com, or you can find me on LinkedIn. Send me a note there. I'm happy to connect. I'm very active on LinkedIn. But yeah, the website, thecoosolution.com is a great place to start.
Derek, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today on Smashing the Plateau.
Thanks,
my guest has been the founder and CEO of The COO Solution, Derek Fredrickson. Thank you, Derek, for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community, a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.